This is the Saturday Night Live Writing Speaker Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on October the 6th, 2000. Our speaker is Gail H. Menlo Park, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
My name's Gail. I'm an alcoholic. So this is my home group. I know a lot of people here. I've been coming to SNL since August 6, 1990. It's my sobriety date. If you don't have one, get one. But tonight, I have to take something a little bit out of format, and I don't suggest that people do this, because I know when they do, I always get a little bit like, why are they taking it out of the format? It's supposed to go this way. Wait a minute, they're doing something different, you know, and I'm ready to go up and talk to the secretary about it. But tonight we were having dinner with a friend of mine, not in my honor, in his honor, and that's because he is celebrating 3 years of sobriety today. And he's been recuperating from an illness, and so his energy level isn't so great, so he didn't go to any meetings today, so nobody's saying happy birthday to him. And so I think that we have to sing happy birthday to John Young, John Y, because it's his third AA birthday. So, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you. Because he's feeling better. Skeller's coming back. So I'm not going to bore you guys for an hour, maybe 45 minutes. I don't even know if I can keep people's attention for that long. And I'll tell you something. You know, when I first got here, I really couldn't think of anybody else but me, and I don't know if I could have ever remembered, you know, what maybe somebody else's celebration was, because it was all about me. And it was all what you thought about me. I'm grateful today to have people in this program, and we can celebrate each other's lives. And it all focuses around our sobriety. And that means so much to me. It didn't mean a lot to me. Nothing meant a lot to me 10 years ago when I first got here. And since I've been here, I've learned a lot about life. And I've learned a lot about living and living a different way. And some of that hasn't been graceful, and some of it's been through making mistakes. Some of it's been rather ugly, to be frank. I think I've done everything sober that I did when I was getting loaded. So maybe not everything. I haven't wrecked a car. Okay. I haven't gone to jail. I haven't been arrested. I haven't lost any jobs. I've been able to mend my relationships with my family. So that's gotten better. But, you know, before I came to AA, I started drinking when I was 13 years old. And I didn't come from a family that drank. In fact, I came from a very religious family. We went to church on Sundays and on Wednesdays. And my dad was a deacon. My mom was a deaconess. And it was interesting in my family. And everything looked really good from the outside. And everything was really pretty good on the inside. I didn't think it was so good for a long time, but now that I can look back on my family system, and I can say, you know, I had a good family. My parents loved me. They gave me everything I ever needed. And I used to think there was a problem with that. That's kind of a problem. There's really not a problem with the people that love you and try to give you everything that they can off their back to make your life better. And then I think there's a problem with that. That's a problem. And that's one of the things that AA has taught me. Because before I got here, it was never about me. It was always about you. And it's still about me, and it's not about you. And so my first experience with alcohol was at our junior high dance, and this was in 1977, and the last song was always Stairway to Heaven. That's my era. You know, I listened to that song on the radio. My son says, how could you guys listen to that stuff? I have a 14-year-old. How could you listen to it? So Stairway to Heaven was our last, you know, that was always the, you know, slow dance. Everybody slowed out. And so we used to put alcohol in our little lip gloss containers. And we had a lot of clear lip gloss going on in the late 70s. And it was like strawberry flavored and peach and apricot. And you could do all sorts of things with your lip gloss. And so we used to pour our lip gloss out and pour alcohol in. Well, we would never be able to get enough alcohol in there to have, you know, any type of effect. But we tried. I mean, we were trying to go for it. And we were, you know, we would take our parents' alcohol, not my parents, because my parents didn't drink, so we had to go to other parents' house to get the alcohol. So we'd pour it in there, and then we'd fill up the alcohol bottles with water, and we'd dilute their alcohol. But we never poured out enough because we never had enough lip gloss containers to fill up to get loaded. So I didn't like the taste of alcohol. I mean, I was 13 years old. It burned. You know, it didn't feel good going down. It tasted terrible. We were drinking things like whiskey. You know, 13-year-olds don't drink whiskey. And except unless, you know, I don't know. I mean, I was an alcoholic then, I don't think. Just because I take a drink because I'm 13 doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic, does it? I don't think so. Not from my opinion anyways, which anything I say up here, by the way, is my opinion. Facts are in the book. So that will tell you the real story. And so I was on my way to experimenting with this substance or this liquid potion called alcohol. And then we started to get into some other things. And the people that I was hanging around with, they weren't bad kids. We were normal kids. We were mischievous. We didn't steal. We didn't cut school. We went to school. We did all right in school. We played sports. I was a big-time softball player, so I thought I was a big-time softball player. And you know, I played it since I was 8, and I still play softball a little bit on an AA team. So we would kind of experiment with this little kissing thing, you know, kissing alcohol thing. And then the first time that I was really affected by alcohol was when I was 14. A girlfriend of mine that lived around the corner, she still lives with her mother, by the way, she's 37, so am I. She never made it out of the house. That's how good her life got. Which kind of tells you where the story's going. But we drank this gallon of Columbo wine. You know, I was 14, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just, like, pouring it in a paper cup and drinking it, okay? Not knowing even what kind of effect it was going to produce. Now, this was not a pleasant effect, I can tell you. I was puking my guts out. And I lived two houses away from this girl, and I was 14, and I had to go home because I was 14. Where else was I going to go? I mean, I was the same age as my son, who is now 14, and I'm thinking, where would he go? He goes home every night, and so did I. Anyway, so I go home puking and smelling like this red wine, red thick wine. And I remember it being really thick. I think it was old. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it was, but I had this distinct, horrible taste in my mouth. And I didn't feel good, but I was loaded. I felt different, but I didn't feel good, but I did feel different. And that was my first time, my first great experience getting loaded. And I was drunk. I was. And it didn't feel good. So why didn't I stop then? I ask myself that. I could have. I mean, if you have it, it's like putting your hand on a burner, right? You put your hand on a burner when you're 2 years old and you go, ow, mommy, it hurts. And you never do it again. You know that's hot, right? Okay, pretty simple stuff. So I go and drink this half a gallon of wine, and my girlfriend drinks the other half a gallon of it, and I'm puking my guts out. So why do I go back for more? Now, I'm not asking you to answer that question. I still haven't been able to answer that question. What I know, though, is that I went back for more. And so I kept experimenting. And, you know, you got to remember, this was the days of Day on the Green, Bill Graham Presents, and, you know, we were rocking out to Peter Frampton, and let's see, who else was out there? Boston, and Aerosmith, all those guys, right? And we'd go out there, and we'd make these big signs, you know, for Day on the Green. And we'd put them up, you know, we use like these white sheets, and we'd paint, you know, Peter Frampton and Boston, and they would put our picture on the TV and stuff on the news, and we thought we were so cool. And then we started, you know, mixing up some other stuff, and so we started, you know, drinking a little bit of Jack Daniels and Southern Comfort, because this was all the stuff that, and we just, you know, we'd buy the pint bottles, we would find somebody in a parking lot, and we'd say, hey, could you go get me a pint of this? You know, can you get me a pint of Jack Daniels or Southern Comfort or Schnapps? That was always a big one. And then, you know, to enhance this effect that was so great, that was produced by alcohol in my system, we started smoking weed. And that put a little different twist to my game here. Mind you, I did not know, you know, what I was really doing. I mean, I couldn't label, you know, I can't tell you, I can't stand up here tonight and say, you know, I was a very angry adolescent, okay? I was a very I was in a lot of fear. I was very insecure. I can't stand up here tonight and say that, you know, I had no self-esteem when I was 14 years old. I was just a kid. I was a kid and I was experimenting. And that's what I was doing. And I believe today that that's what I was doing. Now, my experiments weren't very good. I mean, I was experimenting and my research was yielding some pretty bad effects. I was getting sick. I was starting to miss school. I was starting to drop out of the sports that I was so dearly in love with and actually pretty good at once in a while. And I was having, you know, mistrust with my parents because, see, I had to start lying to them about what I was doing. Now, you're not going to go home and tell your deacon mom and or deacon dad and deaconess mom that you're out drinking Jack Daniels and smoking weed with your friends. It's just, you don't do that to your Baptist parents. They don't get it. They wouldn't have known what to do. But they saw this change in me. See, they saw this kid that was like kind of going like this, you know, up the normal path, and I did a big dip. A big dip. I mean, I was down there. And so by this time I was, you know, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. And then we got into doing, we added some more stuff to our chemical experiments. You know, we had alcohol going, we had marijuana going, we had cocaine, we had crank, we had acid, we had mescaline, we had opiates, we had a whole variety of substances that we were experimenting with. And, you know, this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and anything that I ever did to help enhance, everything I did in addition to my drinking enhanced my ability to drink, even though it made me sick. See, this is what I thought. See, this was my trick, was that I thought, well, you know, if I do this, I can do this. See, if I snort a little cocaine, then I can drink more alcohol, because cocaine's going to wake me up, right? Right? Hey, so okay, so then I thought, well, methamphetamine will wake me up even more. So we did lots of that stuff, and hey, are they yelling at me? Do you hear them yelling? Oh, my God, the bar's back at it again. Isn't it great being by a bar for a meeting? I just love that. And we're the ones getting the, you know, infractions. It's so funny. They stand out there and yell, and we stand in back, and we're the one that gets the hate mail. It's kind of funny. But I'll tell you, we've picked up a few people from the bar, you know. We've lost a few to the bar, too, though, so it's probably even. It's an even deal here at SNL, you know. It's kind of like osmosis. Kind of go through that semi-permeable membrane called the wall. And, you know, after all this high school stuff, I did manage to go to college, and I majored in a science, so I know a little bit about that cell stuff. So we continued to experiment, and I continued to do poorly in school, and someone drove in today in a Plymouth Fury. Who has that Plymouth Fury car out there? It's that big station wagon. Biggest, you got that station wagon. My parents had a station wagon like that. And I got to drive that car when I was 16. You should see, what year is that thing? It's like a 68 or something, right? Yeah. So I'm driving around in my parents' 68 Plymouth Fury 3. And this thing is huge. I mean, we had four kids, a dog, and two parents, okay? My parents aren't small people. They're kind of big people. And so, you know, here I am 16. Now I've got my license because my parents, you know, they let me get my license. I didn't deserve my license, but I got my license anyways. And so I'm driving this car around, and I'm over in Sunnyvale because that's my hometown. I grew up in Sunnyvale. And I went to Fremont High School, and so a group of my friends and I were out at a football game, and we leave the football game because we decided to go out and do some of our chemistry experiments. And so we do those experiments, and we're driving down Bernardo, and we're turning onto Heatherstone, which is right off Bernardo, if anybody knows out there. And, man, I ran right over the frickin' street sign, you know, the one that tells you the name of the street. And there I was, and I was going so fast, I just kept going because I was so scared that I was going to get caught. And I was really, I mean, that's the last thing I remember about that night was that street sign. And somehow I got home, and I remembered the next day at some point in my day when I woke up that I ran over that street sign and I didn't get caught. And I was so scared. I mean, it didn't even leave a dent in that car, you know? I mean, like, yes! Thank you, God! I mean, I was from a religious family. I was giving my, you know, I was getting mine back. I paid my dues. And so, you know, I just kind of went in the house. And my parents, you know, they never really, they knew, but they didn't really know, you know? They didn't know what to do. They just saw their little, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed daughter going down the shithole. And they didn't know how to get me out of it. And I didn't know how to get me out of it. And so time went by, and by the time I was 17 and a half, I managed to graduate from high school early because I was one of these crazy people that took classes at night in high school. We took them at the Adult Education Center, you know, to get ahead. And I wanted to get out of high school. Why? I don't know, because I wasn't ready to go to college. I certainly wasn't ready to manage a college type of curriculum. But I wanted out. I wanted out. I didn't like the rules. I didn't like what was going on. I had to be on time. I had to turn in assignments. I had to be accountable. I didn't know that's what being accountable was back then, but that's what I had to be, and I didn't want to be accountable. So I got out early, and I moved to Santa Rosa with him at 17 and a half. And that was one of the biggest mistakes. I made a lot of big mistakes in my life, and that was probably the first one. And so I moved to Santa Rosa with this guy who was the, you know, of course, the big dealer at high school, and his mother had had a nursery school here in Cupertino and moved her business up to Santa Rosa. So we moved up there and kind of moved in with her. I mean, she was real happy about it, I can tell you, having me along. And so things just got worse up there. I did lots of geographics. If you've ever been to Santa Rosa, I think it's the methamphetamine capital of the world. And I, at 18 years old, I was going to do these incredibly classy places called the Cottage Bar. I don't even remember the names of these places, but I do remember a few things that stuck out in my head. I remember one night I woke up and I had a bowl of SpaghettiOs on my chest, and that was good. And And there I was in my bowl of my SpaghettiOs. And, you know, people that know me today, they kind of know how I live. And I know they can see this in me, but I know they probably are wondering, how could it happen to me, you know? And it did. And I remember a couple other things about living up in Santa Rosa and Calistoga and St. Helena and Napa. I had about 5 or 6 different boyfriends in a matter of a couple years. I liked the guys. They liked me. So it was, you know, a mutual thing. And I remember that my life, I just felt very alone. I felt very alone. And it's not to say that before I came to AA, you know, I didn't have any decent times in my life. I think I did. In fact, I know I did. And I know I had some good times when I was out there with my friends. But I had many more bad times than I ever had good times. And for me, when I started drinking, you know, some people talk about drinking as fun and trouble, and trouble. I had, like, fun for a minute, like maybe 30 seconds, and then I had fun and trouble for about another minute, and then I had trouble. I had a lot more trouble than I ever had fun. But it took a lot for me to get that through my thick skull. And I have a thick skull. My father used to tell me that. And I never knew what he meant, you know. And now I know what he meant. 10 years later, I figured it out. That's what sobriety gets you. All your parents' statements come true. I tell ya. Bless your heart, Dad. I love you. So I was going about my merry way. Now, I was in college, by the way, at this time. So here I am having this life where I've got SpaghettiOs on my chest at night, 5 or 6 different guys, you know, kind of working the deal between 5 and 6 of them. That was interesting. And I'm going to school. And I'm not succeeding at school, by the way. I mean, I'm trying, but I'm doing marginal. I'm getting, you know, like C's. That's not good when you're in college. People don't like that. You don't get into graduate school with C's. And so there I am in college, and I'm kind of doing not very well. And I'm not feeling real. I'm away from my family, and I'm feeling really far away from my family. And I'm in Napa. You know, my family's in Sunnyvale, and I'm in Napa, and I'm feeling like I'm so alone. So then when I was 20, I got sick. I had an appendicitis, and I ended up at the hospital, and I had to have my appendix out. And my family came to see me for the first time in 2 years because I was ill, my parents and my grandparents and my aunt and my uncle. That was the first time that I really felt like something was not right in my life. That was the first time I really felt like, wow, you know, something's not right here. You haven't seen your family for 2 years. You've been running amok up here. You're trying to go to school. You're failing. You can't keep a job. And, you know, I couldn't figure out why. And so I just kept going along. And then when I was 21, I moved back down here, and I started dating this guy who was a biker dude. His name was Jeff Floodman. What a name, right? Okay, so the guy's got blonde hair and blue eyes, and he rides this Harley Sportster. So now I'm getting into this action down here back in San Jose, Sunnyvale. We used to go to this bar called the Buccaneer Lounge in Sunnyvale. A guy named Ed owned it, died in the bar from a heart attack. And he kind of liked this woman named Linda, I remember. And he and Linda had this kind of thing going. She was like with some other guy. Anyways, you know how the bar scene is. It's kind of like SNL, you know. Everybody's got some action going on. Stick around. Stay tuned. So I start going around with this guy named Jeff, and Jeff starts going around with this other woman named Belinda, and that didn't make me very happy, I can assure you that, especially she was older. I thought, I'm 20, she's like 29, what's the deal here? I mean, you know, she's probably older than 29. So anyways, he starts running amok with this other woman, and I'm like not happy about that. So, you know, I'm at the bar one night, so what happens? We get in a fight over this loser. And of course, at the time he wasn't a loser, he was everything to me. Oh my God, I mean, I couldn't live without him. You know, and that's how I lived my life. It was either, all or nothing. It was drama and trauma to the bitter end. And I love that shit. Ooh. I don't really. I mean, I loved it when it was good, but when it was bad, oh, it was so painful. And so, you know, what would I do over it? Either way, I'd get loaded. It didn't matter if it was good or if it was bad. And not bad, good, bad, but bad, bad, bad. You know? Not like sick, good, sick, sick. You know? I mean, it was bad. And so, either way, I'd want to feel different. And this was kind of how I was patterning my life. It didn't matter if it was good or if it was bad. I just wanted to be different than what I was right then. If I could make something bad good, I'd do that. If I could make a good bad, I would make a good bad. I'd make something good go bad. What's wrong with that? I mean, I still think about that today. What is up with that crap? Why was I doing all that stuff? Well, you know, the answer's coming, right? Got about 25 minutes, you know, and we'll get there. And so here I am with this guy, and what do? He's with Belinda and kind of with me, and I meet this other guy, his partner. Now, these two guys, he's blonde, the other guy's blonde too, so it didn't make that much of a difference. They weren't both named Jeff, so I had to keep their names straight. That's kind of hard. So here I'm meeting this other guy, and he's blonde. Now, these guys are both bikers. We don't have any of that around here. No Harleys allowed. No. So these guys are both bikers, and they're both prospects for a gang club. And this was kind of fun because this was definitely not my life. You know, I was not raised to ride on the back of a Harley. My parents were not happy at this point in my life. Very unhappy. I was kind of going to hell. Fast. In fact, I probably had already started going to hell when I was about 5. So who knows? Here I am. So I meet this other guy. His name's Craig. And Craig was a lot different than Jeff. Craig was much more sweet and kind and loyal. And I never really understood why this man was involved in a motorcycle club. Because he was just too nice. You know, he used to go to these, like, Hell's Angel parties. And I hope the tape didn't pick that up. And in Monterey. And so that was a trip. I mean, that was a trip. I thought, what am I doing here? People aren't very nice to each other. But anyways, this guy was nice, and this guy eventually became my husband. Now, I didn't get married because I was so in love. I got married because I thought I'd be more secure. And so by this time, see, I've transferred schools. I'm in college down here now, so I'm doing more geographics. And so Craig and I got married. We eloped after really a long-term relationship, 3 months, okay? And at the time, I mean, I was pretty wacky when I was 20. And so, you know, I had kind of gotten rid of Jeff for about a minute. You know, he was gone for a minute, and then I met this other guy named Curtis. And Curtis and I eventually kind of moved in together. So when I eloped with my first husband, I was living with somebody else. Now, what is wrong with that? I mean, that's just common sense. I mean, things are going bad fast. This is like from 13 to 21. Ooh, ooh. It was like one big flushing toilet. And I was like, you know, right in it. I was right in that tide, that cesspool stuff. And so I go and marry this guy. And I have to come back and tell this other guy, goodbye, you know, goodbye. And, you know, hey, this is my story. What can I say? It's all I've got. You know, it's what I hang my hat on, and that's why I come to AA. I earn my seat, right? You think, how can I get in the solution? Have I earned my seat? I mean, because we still got 6 more years to go. It gets, you know, woo. And so anyways, we get married, and I try to settle down. First of all, I'm in my 3rd year of college, and I am a nursing student. So I may have taken care of some of you people. Who knows? I won't tell you what hospitals I worked at. So I was getting my degree in nursing, and I was riding a Harley at night on the back of my husband's Harley. And I was staying up till 5 in the morning doing, you know, all sorts of chemistry experiments. Sleeping for an hour or two, I'd go to my clinicals, and And yeah, I was under the influence there. And that's what I did, taking care of people, taking care of people's lives. So why do I tell this part of my story? Because this is part of my story. And this is the way I'm honest with the people in these rooms. And that's what I need to be. I need to be honest with somebody. And that's what I did. You know, I don't do that anymore. And but that's what I did then. I'm grateful I never got caught. Very grateful. And so then when I was 22, I got pregnant. You know, to add a little kind of, you know, twist. Wasn't expected. And so I stop everything because I knew what could be the effects to my unborn child. And so as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I was like on the straight and arrow. And and then in July of 1986, July 7th, I had my son, who's now 14. And that was and still is one of the biggest blessings of my life. He has taught me, I think, more than any human being will ever teach me about living and loving somebody. That's what I can tell you about my son. And I don't know if I don't know if my son will ever know how much he means to me. I just don't know. Just like I don't think I'll ever know how much I really meant to my parents, because I know how much they love me. And that's what I know. I know how much they love me, but I don't ever think I'll really understand how much I meant to them. And that's okay. So I had my son, and then see, the thing was is that, you know, by this time my family had kind of suggested to me, although we had no experience with problem drinkers or problem drug people in our family, that maybe I had a problem. What do you mean? Me? Are you crazy? I don't have a problem. I'm fine. And so my friends, some of my closest friends from nursing school, we would go out after work or after school, I mean. And, you know, they'd go out to have a beer, and I'd go out to stay out all night. And some of them suggested to me that, yeah, maybe you have a problem, you know. Do you think? No, I don't have a problem. I'm fine. I'm just Jim Dandy here. You know, life's good. And, you know, they kind of tried to point out some of the things in my life, like, well, you know, Gail, you have alcohol on your breath at work. Is that a problem? No, not a problem. Well, your eyes are kind of dilated. Is that a problem? No, no problem there. Well, you're late. Well, no, that's not a problem either. You know, it's okay. That's cool. I'm cool with everything. And so they said, but what about that? I forgot about this. What about that DUI when you were 20? That's not a problem. That's just one. But your blood alcohol was 0.22. That's not a problem. But you ran over a fence. I said, it was only 80 feet of a chain link fence. Big deal. Now, I know the people that are laughing in this room can relate, you know. You know, and if you're not laughing, you know, oh, well. You'll find something to laugh about. Maybe not at this meeting, but at some other meeting, hopefully. Hopefully you can identify. Hopefully you can find some similarities. And so nothing was a problem. But see, it started to become a problem because it started to become a problem with how I took care of my son. My husband at the time was pointing out that this was a problem. It's not normal for a new mother, to go stay out till 2 in the morning. Abnormal. No, it's not abnormal. Well, see, that marriage fell apart. That was a direct result of my drinking. That was a direct result of my drug use. And I went on to live my life, and I went on, and I continued to work. I managed to, you know, be successful at passing my boards as a registered nurse, and I was working at a local hospital. And I just continued to go about my life kind of in this, you know, flushing toilet fashion. And so as my life went on, I lost more of my friends. Needless to say, you know, I mean, all the blackouts, all the hangovers, all the head, you know, the head time that I spent in the toilet, the dry heaves, you know, waking up with people that I didn't know, ending up in places where how did I get here or how did I get home last night? Where is my car? Did I lose somebody's car? I wrecked a car. I mean, for God's sakes, just went on and on and on. But yet it wasn't a problem. And then when I was 26, we went to the Rolling Stones came to town in 1989, November 30th. So I went to the Rolling Stones concert November 30th, and that was a great show. I ended up leaving with a whole group of people that I didn't go with, and I was going to go to Hawaii. And this is another thing. We used to make all these plans. We were going to go here, we were going to go there, and we never went anywhere, man. I mean, it was like, oh, God. We would just yuck about what we were going to do, and, man, we never did it. I don't know about you guys, but I never did. Okay, that was just the way it was. But we talked a lot, and that's what we did best, was we shot our mouths off. And so that night I ended up getting my second DUI. Now, it wasn't so bad as the first, though. You know, I had a .14, but see, it was my second one, and it was in the 80s. No, yeah, 89. And so, see, they weren't as nice. They're even worse now, I understand. And so I had to go to, like, a one-year DUI meeting. Yeah, it cost me $1,800. I lost my license for a while. And that was a problem because I needed to drive. I had a kid. I had all this stuff. I had rent. I had a job. So then I had to go to jail for 10 days, and then I had to come up with a reason why I was taking 10 days off from the hospital that I worked at. I'm going on a trip. Where are you going? Somewhere close. Oh, what are you going to do? Relax. Great. That's great. You going with anybody? No. Just going to go alone. Yeah. So the problem started to become more apparent. And so, somehow, some way, see, it wasn't because I had woke up one day and I said, I got a problem, man. I got to come to AA. I didn't get the solution that way. I didn't go to a spin dry clinic. Sorry for any of those of you that have. But I didn't go to a 28-day program, okay? I didn't go to, I didn't go to Mariposa. I didn't go to that other place up in Santa Cruz. I forget the name of it now. Yeah, the camp. I like the camp. I mean, if I had to do it over again, maybe I'd go to the camp and take a month off. I mean, I think I recommend that. Did not happen for me. So one night I was on my couch and I had this part of my story is kind of interesting because a friend of mine's up in Seattle, and this is in now July of 1990. And in July of 1990, the World Conference was up in Seattle. So I go with my latest man, the one that means everything to me, because they all were the perfect one, and even him, and he wasn't. Turned out he wasn't. Oh, darn. So we go up to Seattle for some reason. Oh, the Goodwill Games. Okay, the Goodwill Games. So we're staying at this hotel. Well, guess what's happening at this hotel? The World Conference for AA. And I'm in this hotel, and I took off one of my little my drunken driving meeting things. You know, we had to go once a week for 3 hours. Mine was on Monday night, so I missed all the football games. I love football. And so I take off, and I tell my my facilitator, because that's what I like to call those guys, Bob. His name is Bob. He had 33 years sober at the time. He probably has 43 years now, because I don't imagine he was ever going to drink again. And so I told Bob that I had to work that night, and I didn't. I was going to Seattle with my latest love. So we went to Seattle, and we were fighting. And I mean, my love relationships were great. We didn't get along. We fought. You know, I don't know about you guys, but, man, we would argue and throw things at each other, and it was always about, it's your fault, and you're this, and you're that. And then we'd make love, and it'd all be great. Woohoo! I mean, I was like, what is wrong with my relationships here? But that's the kind I used to have. I hate, this is just my story. What can I say? So we get home, and we're housing ourselves up there with all these people that are at this world conference in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's people from everywhere. There's Japanese people. There's Chinese people. There's white people. There's black people. There's every people that you can imagine. And then all the ones that are mixed up because they're all meeting each other. Okay, so, but anyways. So I'm like pissed at this guy, and I leave to come home because I got mad and we got in a fight, and I came home, and so I get home, and I decide to go on this kind of my last hurrah, basically. I went back to my, it all started back in Sunnyvale again, so I went back to my girlfriend's house that lived two houses away from my mom and dad, and that was the last 4 days that I remember. And then I woke up. But what I remember the most was when I was driving home from her house. I do remember driving home from her house. And I'm not proud of this story, but this was my last drunk. And this is the one that I hope I remember all of the bad ones. But I hope I remember this one the most, because this is the one that got me to make the call. And from what my sponsor tells me, and from what a lot of other people tell me in AA that I've been here for a long time, they tell me, remember the last time. Don't forget it. And if you do forget it, find somebody that can help you remember the last time, and don't forget how bad you felt, because it may keep you from taking that next drink. And so that story unfortunately involves my little boy, who was 4 years old at the time. And I was driving home with my son at three in the morning, and he was asleep in the back of my car. And I had about a gram of methamphetamine in my pocket, and I had a six-pack of beer in the back seat and one between my legs. And I was living in Cupertino at the time, and I was about three blocks away from my home, and a cop pulls up behind me. And so this cop's just kind of following me, and I'm slowing down. I mean, I wasn't really going fast anyways. I really don't remember how fast I was going, but I knew that if I did get pulled over, I would be in a lot more serious trouble than I was already in. And somehow I got myself home, and that cop just drove right past me. And I bundled my little boy up, who was asleep in the car, and I brought him into my little townhouse that I was renting, and I put him in bed, and I called the hotline. Now, how did I know to call that hotline? I think the only way I knew to call that hotline was because of those drunk driving meetings that I had to go to for that DUI. And I had to go to a few meetings anyways to get a court card signed, like a lot of the court cards that I see in this basket. I didn't like coming here to get that thing signed. I hated it. And so I made that call, and it happened to be a Monday morning, and I didn't go to work that day. I called in sick. And then I went to my little drunk driving meeting thing that night, and I told a guy, I said, I need to go to an AA meeting. And he says, no, you don't. You can go after your meeting here. You can go there. Well, that pissed me off. And so so I sat there, and I went, and then I came to the 8 o'clock meeting Monday night, room 47 at SNL. And you know, I remember walking into this room, and I looked at all you people, and I thought, oh, this is it. I've done it now. You know, and I looked around, and I thought, I would never, ever, ever have anything to do with these kind of people. And so, and who was speaking? Jim B. You know, he's standing up here, and I'm like, who's that guy? And you puke, you see newcomers, crap heads, rah, 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 rah. And I'm like thinking, what? And so here I am, you know, at my first AA meeting. Welcome, we love you. Sit down, you know. And so I did hear one thing, though, and I heard this, and that was keep coming back. And the other thing that I had, and I think that this is just, you know, this is just my story, I had a sense of desperation so badly that something was very wrong inside me. And I had this hole right here. And that hole here is gone now. Sometimes it comes back once in a while, but for the most part, it's gone. It's cured. And it's because this program has given me another way to feel different. See, I still want to feel different. There are times I don't like the way I feel, and I want to feel different. But I've lost that power of choice to be able to use anything to help me feel different, because that just takes me down a path that, you know, leads me to a lot of heartache and destruction, not to mention hurting many, many, many people along the way. And so, you know, I got here, and I was just 27 years old. I was fortunate that I got a sponsor almost immediately. I didn't, like, go ask somebody to be my sponsor. I put my name in the box, you know, I chickened out. And that was okay. I was okay with that. And my first sponsor took me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did that in a matter of a few months. And I was grateful for that. I was grateful to go through those steps in a short period of time. And I got into service. When I got sober, you had to have 90 days to have a meeting. I think now it's 30. You have to have 30 days. I wanted a meeting so badly when I got here. I wanted to participate. I wanted to be in my recovery. Because, see, I had that need to belong. I felt so much, I mean, physically we all look different. But, you know, when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the faces fall off. And what I feel the same as everybody else in this room. Because I am you. And only you can understand that. Only you can understand that. Nobody else can understand that. And so I wanted to be a part of this thing. And I wanted to get... So what did I do? I couldn't get a meeting because I didn't have 90 days. And that seemed like forever. Oh, thought, man, 90 days, how am I going to do that? And so I picked up ashtrays because we used to smoke then. By the way, it's been 10 years that I haven't smoked today. Thank you very much. Outside issue, I know, but I'm proud of that. And so I picked up ashtrays. I did the coffee pot thing. I made myself visible in AA. People got to know me, even if I didn't want them to get to know me. Even if I didn't want to get to know them. I just knew that, you know, my job was to somehow relate to the people in these rooms, because that was the thing that was going to save me. Now, when I got here, and 10 years ago, believe me, I didn't think I would be standing up here on October 6th, year 2000, saying that in 1990, August 6th, that I was going to be here in my life, still in AA. I didn't know that. My intention was not necessarily to come here and get sober forever. I really didn't know what my intention was. Other than that, I could relate to you people. I could relate to what you set up here. I could relate to the language that was in your heart, that was coming through the words of your mouth, through this podium. And what I know is that, you know, over time and over taking these steps, I fell in love with this new way of life that I found here. I fell in love with this recipe that works for me. And so for me, it starts with not forgetting where I came from and what I did to earn my seat here. And I'm so glad I can hang on to that. There are many things that I tell in my story now that I would have never, ever, ever shared when I was brand new. I was too ashamed. I felt like I was just a horrible, bad person. Even though I had a background in a medical field, I just felt like I was one of the most horrible people on the planet. And I wasn't. But I felt like I was. And so I know that by sharing my story, I'm remembering first where I came from. Because I don't want to go back there. I don't want to go back there. And since I've been in AA, I have received so many gifts. I mean, I've got wonderful people that I sponsor, that sponsor me more than I sponsor them, whether they know it or not. I have a wonderful son who's now 14. I've been able to go back. I'm getting my second master's degree. I'm going to be putting people to sleep soon. Woohoo! You know, now I get to, like, anesthetize you guys. I'm just kidding. I love that, you know? And it's great. And so, you know, my life has gone on. I've been able to gain a sense of security. I've won back some of my self-esteem that I destroyed myself. Nobody helped me. Just me. I did it all on my own. I didn't need any help. Thank you very much. There were a few people that tried, though, by the way. I can't let you off the hook completely, wherever they are right now. And I have a sense of peace. See, I know everything's going to be okay today. I don't worry about money, because I've never starved. I've never not paid my PG&E bill. Maybe this hasn't been everybody's experience, but this is my experience. Somehow, my obligations in life have always been taken care of. And these are things that used to freak me out. They used to paralyze me. If the money wasn't there, the PG&E bill was there, the phone, this, that, him, the kid, I would be paralyzed by these things. And it would render me incapable of doing what I needed to do in life. And see, these steps have restored my sense of being, my sense of purpose. And these steps have given me a way to help other people. And I've had a spiritual awakening here. I've had many spiritual awakenings here. Because, you know, I'm not the miracle people. AA is the miracle. AA is the miracle, not me. And this spiritual movement, the greatest spiritual movement ever, has saved more lives. And the door is always open here. The door is never closed. And, you know, what I know is that when I feel best is when I'm helping somebody else. And whether that's carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous or if that's helping a lady get up, you know, the curb because she's too old, she can't quite make it up, that's when I feel best. I didn't learn that outside. I didn't learn that before I got to AA. I learned that in AA. So anything that I have to give in my life has come from this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so if you're new here tonight and you didn't hear anything that, you know, rattled your cage or, you know, where you could identify, that's okay. Go to another meeting, for God's sakes. There's only about 650 in this valley. Find yourself a home group. This is a great home group. This group saves more lives. I've been here for 10 years watching people come through the door. And we carry the message and we carry it well. And that's why I still come here. Even though I live in Menlo Park, my home group is SNL. And my home group will always be SNL. And I'm grateful for the message that we carry here. And I'm grateful for the people that are here because you are the people that give me my messages that I need to hear. Thank you for listening and keep coming back.